Royal Free, it was the hospital where they had the very first almoner ever.
Yes.
And therefore, by the time I got there in 26, it was established.
Yes.
So I didn't get that sort of a comeback.
No.
Now, there had been one quite a long time at St. Mary's.
Yes.
And the one at, when I went to the miller was, this Irish woman was a pretty forceful character. I would say she was one of the pioneers.
Yes.
But she had forged her place.
Yes.
She was totally accepted.
Yes.
She was powerful.
Yes.
She was very powerful.
Yes.
She did a lot of things which in after years we would never have touched.
Yes.
Making appointments for x-ray, special x-rays and all this sort of thing. So that, and seeing absolutely every single patient and being responsible for assessment. But this, I mean, was common throughout the voluntary hospitals that the almoners were expected to make an assessment of payment for whatever treatment they were having. What else?
Yeah, well, we were talking really about, so really, you're in your experience, these, if you like, this sort of forging, the pioneering had already been done, and you
it had
stepped into a role which had already been carved out
which was
by
there.
Your predecessors.
That's right.
Yes.
But I came on to do the forging later.
Yes, yes.
Because I left there in 1931.
This is Miller General.
The miller, yes. Really, I think for two reasons. One was that my father died, and I wanted to be rather nearer home because it was a long journey down to Greenwich every day and back.
Yes.
And they were quite long working hours too. We used to start there at, oh, I don't know, 8:30 or something in the morning. I think it was 8:30. Anyway, it was quite a long day, and I really wanted to be a little nearer so that I could be with my mother a little bit more. But the other thing was that by the time I had had this amount of experience, I was, as I have always been, extremely anxious to have students. And I knew that the Miller General, you know, it wasn't big enough, it wasn't... it wasn't diverse enough to have students. And so I got what you might call a proper job at the Royal Free Hospital. They were then advertising for somebody. And I got a job at the Royal Free where I did get students. And I was there from 31 until 35.
Yes.
Now, in 1935, the London County Council Municipal Hospitals opened their doors to almoners for the first time on a general, in a general way. There had been a few between 1930 and 35, but mostly they were in maternity departments where the need for them was felt to be the greatest. But in 1935, the LCC suddenly decided that they would man all their hospitals with an almoner's department. And this was interesting. It was also a bit paralyzing because there weren't just the numbers to go round. I think there were 28 hospitals. So they wanted 28 people who could be in charge. And then they picked it out very carefully. I think it was mostly where there was a maternity department. They decided that they needed an assistant as well.
Yes.
But not a shred of clerical help. Not a shred. Well, I got a post then at the Archway Hospital. Nice little hospital just through the park. And that was a single-handed hospital, although they had something like 600 beds. Now, that was a very interesting place to be in. It was a hospital with a very, very nice atmosphere. And I had my own office, which in fact was a four-bedded ward. And I was the only one there, so everything that went right, I could take the credit for. Everything that went wrong, I hadn't got to look round.
Yes.
Now, this was my first experience of being in charge of a department.
Uh-huh. Yes.
But there were so many differences there, but from a voluntary hospital to the municipal hospital, that struck me all of a heap.
Mm.
Do you want me to tell you about them?
Yes.
Well, one of them was that if at a voluntary hospital you unfortunately opened a letter that belonged to another department, and the matron was the worst, you had to go up to see them, at least the head did.
Yes.
With great grovelling, and I am so sorry, and I don't know how it happened, and all this.
Yes.
And when I got to this LCC hospital, I found I had slit a letter that belonged to somebody else, and I thought, oh my God, fathers, now I've got to go.
Yes.
I wonder what on earth will happen, whether my head will be left on or off.
Yes.
And when I got there, I said, I am so sorry, but I slit this, was put in my post by mistake, and I slit it, but I have not opened it or read it.
Yes.
Oh, they said, thank you so much.
Yes.
Full stop.
Yes.
I mean, it's just a matter of course.
Yes.
When we got a patient who rolled up in the afternoon, who was after the time when normally outpatients would be seen.
Yes.
And I said, well, what's going to happen? You know, she doesn't sound at all well.
Yes.
And the outpatients are finished. Now, at the voluntary hospitals, outpatient admissions stopped at whatever, 3:30 or something like that. And nobody was allowed in after that. If they were bad enough, they went to casualty. But at the municipal hospital, they said, oh dear, 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 dear. Well, of course, you've got to be seen.
Yes.
And I thought, well, we're in on the ground floor.
Yes.
This is it.
Yes.
And this is right.
Yes.
And working in that hospital on my own was very, very interesting because I worked rather carefully through and worked from one to another. Mm. Now, I was supposed to see every single patient there. And get a form filled in. I didn't do the assessment, but I was supposed to fill in a form or else say that they belonged to some hospital fund or something of this kind and send it into the local area office. And this went on for some time, and I used to think to myself, well, you know, I don't know whether if I wasn't here, I don't know whether it would make the slightest bit of difference. Well then, sounds silly, but fortunately for me, King George V died. And everybody was told that if they wanted to go to the funeral, they could be free to do so.
Yes.
And I thought, well, work is not all that so pressing. Maybe a very long time before I have a chance to go to another monarch's funeral, I think I'll go.
Yes.
Well, I mean, it did me a power of good, not the funeral, but the next day, you know, a ward rang down and they said, oh, I rang for you yesterday.
Yes.
And then, of course, I remembered.
Yes.
But the mere fact that people had wanted me and missed me did a tremendous lot.
Yes.
And the other thing that did quite a lot for my ego was that at that particular hospital, they had, as paid part-time consultants, people had who had been honorary consultants at the Royal Free Hospital.
Oh, yes.
And I think a whole chain of students one day nearly fell flat when the a very nice chap who was an orthopedic specialist came down the corridor, saw me and said, oh, fancy seeing you here, how nice.
Yes.
And they thought, who is this peculiar young woman that he's taking notice of, you see?
Yes.
But this was extremely nice. And I occasionally got patients in. I had one patient who said, oh, it's nice to see your old face again. Which was meant in an endearing way, not years or anything of that kind. But all those little things go for quite a lot.
Yes, indeed.
Well, after I'd been there, I went in September, and I think I was there about a year. The LCC, in the way that they did have, wanted to shift me on.
Yes.
Now, I swear that everybody else knew about this before I did.
Yes.
Because the area officer, instead of either ringing me up and telling me to ensure that I did know,
yes,
had written a memo and let it come through the ordinary messenger thing.
Oh, yes, yes.
By which time I had had one person who had rung me up and said, can I come and see you sometime? I want to see how the department works. And I said, certainly, but what for? Mm-hmm. Well, she said, oh dear, don't you know I'm taking over on Friday week. And I said, well, I've heard nothing about it, but it isn't your fault, Miss Dunch. I mean, by all means, we'll arrange when you can come, but thanks for telling me.
Yes.
Well, she felt awful.
Yes.
And I didn't feel too good.
No.
And I ran County Hall about something to do with the association, the staff association. And I said this, that, and the next thing about it. And the chap up there said, oh, well, it'll all be different when you get to Area 8. Oh, I said, Area 8's where I'm going, is it? Well, do tell me more. What hospital am I going to? Well, he nearly fell flat.
Yes.
And said, oh, for heaven's sake, don't you know? And I said, no, I do not.
Yes.
So he told me that I was to be transferred to St. Giles at Camberwell.
Yes.
But, I mean, that was the way that sometimes these things happened.
Yes.
What I call quite an insensitive sort of person.
They could just transfer you, could they? Without
they could just transfer, because, you see, we had joined the service,
yes,
as a service to go to any of the hospitals where we wanted.
Mm.
And although some of us stood out for the fact, they told me originally that they were going to send me to Stepney or somewhere.
Yes.
They said, oh, we're trying to send people as near home as possible. Mm. It was either Mile End or Stepney or somewhere. And I said, look, don't be ridiculous.
Mm.
I said, there are four hospitals almost on my doorstep,
mm,
or with a very short bus ride to get to them.
Mm.
So I don't know what you're talking about, Mile End and Stepney, which are really quite difficult for me to get to from here.
Yes.
So they obviously thought again, and they put me in Archway.
Oh, yes.
That was when they put me in Archway. But once having settled me there, they decided that they would move me. Somebody was leaving at St. Giles, and I moved down there into a department,
mm-hmm,
where I had two assistants.
They made you head of a bigger department.
That's right. That's right. Yes. Well, I mean, it was right, because actually at the beginning there was a woman who had very little experience, who was put at the hospital on the other side of the road, St. Mary's Hospital.
Yes.
And she felt very, very uncomfortable, because she said, well, there's Warren with 8 years' experience, me with two or something.
Yes.
And she's in a one-eyed place.
Yes.
And here am I with the staff. Well, we used to meet from time to time.
Mm.
But, I mean, they didn't place people well from that point of view at all.
Mm.
Mm. It took them a long time to get to understand how you did place people.
Yes.
And nothing made them more angry, because it began to happen. We were only under them for 13 years. But nothing made them more angry than for somebody who was prepared to join the service to say, I will join if I can go to A, B, or C hospitals.
Yes.
Where there are vacancies.
Mm.
And, you know, County Hall more or less said, well, it's not for you to choose. And they said, right, then we just don't come into the service at all.
Mm. Mm.
And they couldn't understand this.
Yes.
They couldn't understand this at all.
So you had a choice of employers, both in the sense of different hospitals, but also joining different administrative setups. You could go to a voluntary hospital, which is quite different in administrative setup from
being
a local authority hospital.
Yes, once I got into a local authority, I didn't come out of it.
No, because you said they were more professional.
Well, I think they were. I think they were.
Mm.
You see, when you went there over the question, for instance, of assessment, they worked on a realistic basis. They said the cost to the council per week per bed is X pounds. Now, if the patients can and are prepared to pay this, or say they're prepared to pay it, you need do no further investigation whatsoever.
Yes.
Well, at a voluntary hospital, the sky had been the limit. And you had to get financial particulars.
Yes.
And get them to pay as much as they could, because there were many who couldn't pay anything.
Was that an onerous part of an almoner's job, that business, the assessment business?
Well, it depended how you looked upon it. If you looked upon it as your first priority, that must be done whatever else came or went, then it would have been very onerous. But I said, having got my terms of reference from the LCC, they put down as the first duty of an almoner to help and advise patients.
Yes.
And I said, if I've got several people outside my door in outpatients with difficult problems, and others is just waiting for me to assess whether they can manage 1 and 6 per attendance or not, there is no question in my mind where I'm going to spend the time.
Yes.
And I stuck to that, and my staff stuck to it.
Yes.
But you had, in a way, to make a stand. But there was a dichotomy there, you see, because you worked for the public assistance staff.
Yes.
Because when the service was set up, the public health side said, if they're going to have anything to do with money or assessment, we're not having them on our staff.
Yes.
So we had to go on to public assistance.
Yes.
Now, in some ways, this gave us an extremely good position.
Yes.
Because we had two masters that we could play off one against the other. And we weren't bound by any, really, of the hospital regulations. We were dependent on them for accommodation.
Yes.
And every now and again when accommodation was short and I said, you know, I needed more for something or other. And they were, you know, the medical superintendent, one I remember in particular, was very vexed that he couldn't give it to me because he knew that I was right and he ought to be able to. And therefore his reaction was, well, in any case, you're not my staff, Miss Warren.
Yes.
You know, as much as to say, this absolves me. So.
Yes.
But the work there, of course, was fascinating.
Yes.
I mean, all the maternity cases that in the voluntary hospital you'd said, it's a second illegitimate, and therefore the voluntary hospital won't touch it.
Yes.
I said when I got to the LCC hospital, now, I'll get all these people with their problems and I will be able to try to help them.
Yes.
Instead of just saying, no, we can't take you.
Yes.
Which went quite against the grain to me. I mean, I could see their point.
Yes.
They got a limited number of beds.
Yes.
And they were also terrified of litigation.
Yes.
Which they were more likely to get. But mind you, from a medical point of view, the first babies were the most interesting and might have the complications.
Yes.
Whereas once they'd had a baby, it wasn't likely to, well, it wasn't as unknown.
Yes,
And therefore it wasn't as interesting medically.
Was it difficult for you at the beginning going on the ward? So I've asked everyone this about whether it was upsetting or... I mean, the trauma and so on.
Well, I think I probably got over that difficulty at the Miller Hospital. Now, the thing was that in my training, I hardly ever went on the wards, which was absolutely ridiculous.
Really?
Absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I know once when the head's clerk was away, I was sent up to give a patient their convalescent forms or their ticket, railway ticket or something. But I never did what I call a proper interview with anybody in a bed. And when the head at the Miller was going away on holiday and we were having a locum in, she said, I think it'll be best if you do my work, which is the inpatient work. And we have the locum for the outpatient work because that will be easier for you to keep an eye on because you know it all. So I said, right. And I said to myself, heaven help me and the patients. Because I have never interviewed patients in the ward. I didn't tell her this. But you know, the first one I got up to, having got this great wall between me and a patient because they were lying in bed, I said, well, look, don't be so ridiculous. They are people. They may be horizontal, but I mean, they're still people. There's no difference. The only thing was, of course, that you had to steer around the ward etiquette. And that was quite a thing to do. Yes, that was quite a thing to do. But
have you any stories about that?
About the ward etiquette. Well, I mean, I think you had to tread very warily on getting to know very quickly. When the consultants did their rounds, you also had to get to know your ward sister well, to know whether they were prepared to let you in to see people. And sometimes they were a bit agin this. Not always, but sometimes they were. And this, of course, was much worse in a voluntary hospital than it ever was in a municipal hospital. Because there you were taken as part of the furniture, and I mean, you've got to get on with your job just the same as anybody else had. So they were there was far less question as to whether you went in or whether you didn't at a certain time. But I mean, as I'm sure you know, these ward sisters, many of them who are absolutely admirable people, were absolutely autocratic as could be. And could make your life a hell if you wanted. And you never really knew what they were thinking, because I had a member of staff once who was leaving, and I think I told the ward sister where perhaps the most tricky ward sister. I said to her, "Oh, we're losing Mrs. Lynham." "Oh," she said, "whatever shall we do without her?" And when I told the girl this, she said, "Well, knock me down." She said she'd never taken a blind bit of notice. Frequently it's been totally inconvenient. I didn't think she valued me in the very slightest. Well, I said, she doesn't know what she's going to have in the future, and she's going to miss you very much, so it's a good thing you know it before you go. And you just had to pick up bits like this so that you could keep people's ego up a bit.
And by this, the time we're into now, the sort of middle 30s, sort of psychoanalysis was becoming part of the culture. And I wondered whether any of it had sort of, kind of percolated through.
Oh, it percolated through, but a lot of it left me fairly cold. I mean, to my mind, common sense and sensitivity was far more important than some psychoanalytical whatever. I mean, I remember once when I got to Hammersmith, which was in 1942. I remember once I had a staff meeting, and we used to have a staff meeting that one time was what we called administrative, and I used to tell them what was going on and what was coming and this and that. And the other one, we used to discuss a case so that there could be discussion on a case. And I had one or two very good caseworkers. And I had she was detailing about a case one day, and we were getting a bit deep in this psychoanalysis, and I looked round at my staff, and I thought, you know, they admire the way she does it, but they are not following it.
Yes.
And they are not really learning very much from it.
Yes.
And I thought, you know, I've got to break this somehow.
Yes.
And I suddenly said, you know, Mrs. Lambrick, I have no idea what this man is like. I said, is he married or single? Is he middle class, working class? What is his surround? Because, I mean, at present he is just a sort of analytical whatever.
Yes, yes.
And the whole staff breathed a sigh of relief, as much as to say, we've been longing to say this, but didn't dare.
Yes, yes.
And, well, I mean, I think at times it's useful in its place, but not to go beyond, and not to have what I call the bare bones of the of the person there. You must know what their social setting is and what kind of person they are.
Yes, yes.
Was missing.
First things first.
First things first.
Well, perhaps we can come back to ideas. Did you say you came forward to 1942 in the Hammersmith?
Yes, now wait a minute, where have I jumped from? I was 35 to 36 at the Archway.
Yes.
And then in 36 I went to the St. Giles Hospital, which was a much bigger hospital. They had about 800 beds there. And a very nice hospital to work in, very, very, very nice atmosphere and all the rest, and I enjoyed that very much. And I was there over the beginning of the war. In fact, I was bombed out from it.
Yes. Yes.
They had a bomb right on the centre boiler.
Did they?
It only killed the boilerman, which sounds an awful way of putting it, but I mean, at the time they had, I think, at least 800 patients there. And not one was harmed, but the boiler man was killed. Because they could do nothing without the boiler, so all the patients had to be evacuated to other hospitals and so on. And then gradually they got this put right, and it started up again. But there was a time when it was clear. And they asked me to go to St. Luke's Hospital over in Fulham, Chelsea. And that was a totally different setup.
Yes.
Very, very personal, very, very genteel.
Yes.
A very nice little hospital to work in, where all the little Chelsea ladies used to come in, and so they'd come in for their afternoon cup of tea. And working round in these different hospitals, different parts of London, it was most interesting that you got totally different reactions from clients, and you had to treat them in totally different ways. Well, when I say treat them, I mean you had to work with them in quite a different way. But I remember at St. Giles, the Friday before we were, the Friday before the bomb fell on the Sunday. And my clerk said to me, I think one of the clerks had left. Well, it wasn't a clerk, it was my assistant said to me, what are you going to do on Monday? Now Miss Cherry, or whatever her name was, has left. And I said, I do not know. And she looked at me in blank amazement, and we both went home. And on Monday morning, we came to pick up the bits. And I said to her, this is what we're doing on Monday morning.
Yes.
And she said, well, I was staggered. She said, I had never, never, never heard you say, I do not know.
Yes.
And I don't know, there was something about it that I felt, I can't deal with that now.
Right.
I must wait till Monday. And I mean, I couldn't, in fact, have been righter, whether it was intuitive or what it was, I don't know. But I mean, on the Monday, we were busy taking sticks and hats and coats and goodness knows what from St. Giles round to King's College Hospital, where a lot of our patients went.
Yes.
And where the almoners there, poor dears, had never seen a pension book.
Really?
And they had no idea how to cash them, how to get the patients to sign them, what they did with them, or anything.
Yes.
So I said, oh, you poor dears. Mm. Well, you know, I'll give you a lesson, and if you run into any difficulty,
yes,
let me know and I'll come round immediately. I knew the staff there well.
Yes, yes.
But that was quite an experience. Well, then I went back from when they got on their feet a bit at St. Giles. I went back to St. Giles because, much to my amazement, the matron asked me, asked whether I could come back again.
Yes.
Well, now, the matron and I had never been buddies. All right, we'd got along quite well together, but I never thought I counted for anything with her. But there was she saying, you know, why can't we have Miss Warren back again?
Yes.
So I went back for a time, and then the LCC said they wanted to transfer me to Hammersmith.
Yes.
And, of course, Hammersmith was the only postgraduate school in the country.
Yes.
It was the first in the world, I think.
Yes.
And an intensely interesting place to work in. Mm. Because in a way, you were working again in a very complex situation. Mm. You got the whole of the medical school,
yes,
the dean of the medical school,
yes,
and you got the administration being carried on by the London County Council, in a way, underneath.
Yes.
So that in each of the sections, maternity, medicine and surgery, you had what they called an LCC officer, who was a fairly senior person.
Yes.
And if it was a question of discharges or something that really hit the administration, then they were the ones to be consulted and make the decisions.
Mm.
But most of the medical treatment and so on was done by the others.
Yes.
But it was a very interesting situation because they had a patient in there, this was during the war, and they said to me, oh, well, this patient will go out. And I said, well, you know, I've got a convalescent vacancy for her on Friday and you won't discharge her on Tuesday.
Mm.
And in my opinion, it will not work.
Yes. Yes.
And you'll probably have her back again.
Mm.
Oh, no, 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 Miss Warren will be perfectly all right. So I felt very strongly about this case, and I went to the LCC officer, and I explained what I explained to the other doctor, and I said, you know, I don't think it will work. I'll do everything I can to make it work, but I don't think it'll hold.
Mm.
Well, she said, in this case, I don't really think I can override them. Mm. So I said, right. Patient went out. Within 24 or 36 hours, they were back.
Mm.
We lost the convalescent vacancy because they had to be back for about a week.
Mm.
Now, I didn't very often take this stand because I thought, if I do, they'll just say, oh, she's crying wolf, wolf again.
Mm. Mm.
But every now and again, like this one, there was a case that completely stood out.
Mm.
And I said, well, it's my duty.
Yes.
Because if I say nothing, they can all turn round on me later in the week and say, why didn't you tell us that this wouldn't work?
Mm. Yes, right.
And in a way, she'd been sent out despite my saying that it wouldn't work.
Mm.
Well, it was. But on the whole, we worked very amicably together.
Did the war make a lot of difference to the sort of patients that came to Hammersmith, or the content of the work there?
Well, it was much shorter,
mm-hmm,
because they moved them down to evacuation hospitals.
I see.
And therefore you often only had them in for a very, very short time.
Yes.
So that was one of the big differences.
Mm-hmm.
And of course we got a lot of war casualties in,
mm-hmm,
and you were dealing with totally different problems, such, yes, as whether this person had got a home to go to or not, yes. and perhaps comforting relatives who'd come in to see them and all this sort of thing.
Yes.
So it was really different. When we had the when the bombing was on and all that, it wasn't all the time, of course, but there was, I suppose, a couple of years when this happened.
And were you actively involved with the Institute at this time, didn't you?
Well, yes, I was, you know, almost right through. I became a, on the professional side, I became what they called a group secretary. They divided London, well, I suppose they divide the country into groups, but particularly in London. And you had an honorary secretary and a chairman
yes.
to each of the groups, which wouldn't be a tremendous number of people. But the honorary secretary was responsible for, in discussion with the chairman, calling meetings, sending out notices, summoning people in, and generally diffusing information and this sort of thing. And I was asked to do this. And I felt rather cheery at doing it because I'd only been qualified about 5 years. I think this was somewhere about 1933. Anyhow, I did it for a year or two, and I can't remember when, but I then got elected. We used to have six representatives on the Institute of Hospital Almoners
yes.
From the association, so that they didn't work on parallel lines and not know what was going on.
The difference between those two organisations was
what one? One was a professional body.
Yes.
The Hospital Almoners Association.
Yes.
The Institute of Hospital Almoners was the training body.
Right.
And the training body had doctors and all sorts of high-ups from here and there. But they also had six from the professional organisation who were mostly pretty senior people.
Yes.
Can't remember what year I got onto it, but I was on it and found it very interesting.
You represented the professional body on the training body.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right. I was one of six to do this. And it was very interesting to see how the higher echelons worked and all this.
Yes.
And then later on I became chairman, and then the association changed its name from Hospital Almoners Association to the Institute of Hospital Almoners. Now this was when the two bodies combined, because there came a time when the six of us who were on said, look, we go and listen to all this on a Wednesday afternoon somewhere or other, and then we really go through the whole thing again when we have one of our meetings. And do we really need to have two different bodies? And in 1945, I think it was, the two were amalgamated. And I can't remember when I first took any kind of office, but the chairman of that body and the president were both medical people.
Yes.
And
when we combined.
Yes. And the chairman of the combined body held office for 5 years, and the same doctor who was very, very interested in doing it had two extensions of five, so that he served actually for 15 years altogether.
Yes.
Now there was a professional almoner who was the vice chairman. When he was the chairman, the vice chairman was always a member of the profession. So that a lot of us got experience of being vice chairman before we ever had to come into being chairman or anything. But at the end of his 15 years, he said he really felt he'd done his whack and he couldn't go on any longer. As it so happened, the president at that time, I think he died.
Yes.
And so Alan Moncrief was asked to become president.
Yes.
And the association then looked at itself very carefully. The Institute looked at itself very carefully and said, look, we've been nursed along by the medical profession for so long, isn't it time that we had one of our own members? And there was a lot of humming and hawing about whether it would be a good thing and whether it wouldn't, and then it got down to, well, it might be a good thing in theory, but who on earth could you put in there? And then I don't know how it happened, these things always happen, you know, away from you. Somebody said, well, you know, if Warren was prepared to do it, we would all accept her. So I became the first chairman, and I held that for three years. And at the end of that 3 years, am I right? I think I'm right in saying that the secretary left. And the incoming secretary, I said to her, now look, I am perfectly willing not to raise a finger, but leave you a clear line to start with a new chairman and forge things as you like. Now, she and I knew each other very well indeed. We'd worked together on professional matters for a long time. And she said, oh, for heaven's sake, don't go now. Do stay for at least a year or 2 years while I get into my stride, and then it'll be a different matter. So I think I agreed to go on for 2 years.
Sorry, can I just interrupt? The chairman's job was what, an honorary...
Oh, absolutely.
Job. You did your full-time job as...
Oh, you did a full-time job, and you just did this in your spare time.
And the secretary the same?
No, the secretary was paid. She was paid... the secretary was paid from 1941 to somewhere like that.
I see, yes.
Because from having been, I think I've missed a beat, from having been secretary of a group, I then became the honorary secretary of the association, which numbered then, it numbered about 100 in 1930. And by 19, when I took this on later, in the 30s, I don't know what it was, probably between 1 and 200. But it was still just possible to do it as a voluntary thing, although it took a lot of time, but I was very interested in it. And did it. But we had a paid secretary from the early 40s.
I see, yes. And she asked you to hang on as chairman while she... For a couple of years or so.
Well, yes, it wasn't that one, actually. The first one we had, she gave up. I think she decided she was going to retire. She was 60. And the incoming one had been a vice chairman, and she'd been on committees with me, and we knew each other very well. And she said, stay on for the time being. Well, then, at the end of, I think, the 2 years, I said, well, now I go, quite definitely. There's no extension or anything of that kind. So I went, and they appointed another chairman to follow me. And shortly after that, we got word from Alan Moncrief, who had been the president. He was by then a pretty sick man. And he felt that it wasn't fair to leave his name there and not really do any of the work. So he said he thought the time had come for him to resign. And then they looked around for a president. Well, we were then working towards having the combined British Association of Social Workers, which came in at 1970. And they asked me to become the president. So I was the first professional president. And I saw the institute out, so to speak. And then, I mean, if we just carry on with the professional side, I was one of the representatives from our organization to work with similar representatives from seven other bodies that were hoping to join together and form the British Association. And we worked from 1963
yes.
to 1970,
yes.
by which time we had hammered out a constitution that everybody had agreed to.
Yes.
And we'd worked out what sort of professional association we were going to have.
Mm.
And this smallish group of us, I think it was around 30 in the end, had all got our eyes on David Jones.
Yes.
Everybody had great respect for him, and we felt that if he could be the first chairman, this would be marvellous. Now, Kay McDougall had been the chairman of what we called the... That's right, SCOSWA. Yeah. And she didn't want to become the first chairman. She said she'd had enough. And I think she was just about retiring then, and she wanted to be free of it. But anyhow, the understood thing was David, and David was agreeable to do it, and I think interested, and I think wanted to do it.
Yes.
And we called the first meeting. And I think the night before, or the morning of the meeting, we got a message to say that unfortunately circumstances were such that he couldn't possibly take it. Mm. Now, I think he was not free at that moment, although we all guessed what it was. Mm. He was being put up as the new director. Mm. And I think that Robin had said to him, Robin Hughes-Jones had said to him, look, my boy, if you're going to go for this, you cannot take on the formation of a new association, which will, bar nothing, take an awful lot of time, if it's going to get properly established.
Yes.
So at the meeting, I was vice chairman of this SCOSWA, and at the meeting, you see,